Hello! Welcome to the Higher Education Researcher. This is a podcast by the Center for Higher Education Research and Evaluation at Lancaster University. My name is Olga Rotter, and my guest today is Dr. Sylvie Lomé. Sylvie is a lecturer in policy and practice at the University of Manchester. She is a part of Critical Education Policy Research Group and the founding member of the Higher Education Research Network. Welcome and thanks for coming, Sylvie.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to be here.
Today, we will talk about Sylvie's research on UK policy regarding international students and about two of her ongoing projects. We will discuss how Sylvie's work on UK policy on international students led to a development of a framework of representations and how policy representations are carried over into practices of teaching and leadership. Sylvie, may I first ask you to briefly introduce your projects?
Yes, I'd be delighted to. So I was lucky enough to be working with a fantastic team of colleagues this year, in particular Dr. Jenna Mittelmeyer, who's recently joined us at the University of Manchester. And we came up with a project which received funding from the Society for Research in Higher Education. And we wanted to look at pedagogies of internationalisation. So basically, how are we teaching international students? So, you know, as you said earlier, you've got some interest yourself in the international student recruitment area. And this is what my previous research was based on. I was looking at the policy analysis around recruiting international students in the UK. But what I didn't have in my previous research was any empirical data on what the university structures are like around internationalisation and international students. We've been recruiting international students in the UK now really professionally and intensively for the last 20 years. But the way that we teach international students is really taken for granted. And I think that a lot of the literature into the pedagogies of higher education, with the exception of a few researchers who are highly critical, like Professor Paul Ashwin, it is often very case study oriented, very focused on each individual lecturer and their particular or kind of personal practices. So it's very difficult to get a sense of a sector overview of pedagogies, which is separate from the very policy oriented notions associated with teaching excellence framework and national student satisfaction surveys. So those kinds of surveys and data, they don't really tell us how we teach. They might tell us how many contact hours, how happy students are, but they don't say what's happening in a lecture, what's happening in a seminar. And of course, part of the reason and the rationales, which I wrote about in my book, behind international student recruitment is, well, it should improve the curriculum and it should improve education in the UK for everybody. So we know from lots of the literature, and this is what Jenna Mittelmeyer has written about, is that intercultural education isn't easy. It doesn't come naturally. And Neil Harrison has written a lot about this as well, that actually the experiences of international students in the classroom can be quite challenging. It's not obvious that intercultural learning happens just because international students are in the classroom. So that's the logic behind this project. We want to find out what are teachers doing with international students in the classroom to make UK higher education really good. So we're doing interviews at the moment. We're just coming to the end of the data collection for that project, and it's been fantastic. People have been so generous to talk to us during this really busy period, the worst possible semester to be asking academics to spend extra time talking to us. But I think it's been quite nice for some of them to reflect on their experiences, because for many of them who don't come from an education background, articulating their pedagogy and their teaching decisions is quite challenging, but also quite rewarding, I think. So we're still in the early stages, but we've talked a little bit in some conference presentations and seminars about the results. And what we're finding is that there's a lot of consistency, actually, in how that we're teaching international students. Lots of emphasis on reducing lecture time or teacher talking time, breaking information transferal up into small chunks for delivery, lots of activity-focused teaching, and a really heavy emphasis on empathy and care as being the characteristics of a really good teacher in higher education, particularly for international students. So it's been very encouraging, really, and we're really enjoying that project and looking forward to getting stuck in with the really concrete data analysis.
Thank you, Sylvie. One of the problems that you emphasize in your project funded by Society of Research in Higher Education is a lack of critical research on pedagogy that supports international students' academic transitions and learning experiences in higher education. So what issues do you see in the past research and how these limitations may impact international students?
So when I say that there's a lack of a critical literature on pedagogy, there is a huge literature from many different disciplinary areas on the challenges of international student experiences.
What it often does is create a deficit narrative of international students. Because students do experience challenges in coming to the UK and associated with the way in which the UK promotes itself as a destination for international study, we promote ourselves nationally as a high quality destination. And so when international students struggle, for example, with academic skills, with language and so on, it's very easy to shift the responsibility for that struggle onto the students rather than examining the institutional pedagogic structures which might generate those struggles. To take an example, if we look at something like avoiding plagiarism or referencing, that's a common issue for international students. But it's also a really common issue for British students, particularly those from a non-traditional or widening participation background, to also struggle with that, with learning academic language, with learning the specifics of how to reference in particular disciplines and so on. And so the way that that often gets treated in the literature is to identify it as a problem or a lack in the students, and therefore to try to remedy that lack within the students rather than in challenging the structures of pedagogy or the institutional narratives. It would be perfectly possible to design first year assessments that relied less heavily on academic literature and referencing, or scaffolded it into the teaching. And this is something that's come out of the interviews with lecturers. Some lecturers talk about embedding academic skills into their disciplinary teaching rather than outsourcing it to a centralized support system. So that's what we're hoping to overcome, and what we see as being the contribution of our project is rather than looking at how we can make students responsible for the apparent deficits in their learning, looking at how teachers are trying to make their pedagogy more accessible for all students is actually what we're finding. We focused on international students and for the project, but what we're hearing from participants is that the changes they're making to their pedagogy, they see as making it more inclusive for everybody. And that's a really encouraging finding.
Thank you very much, Sylvie, for talking about your motivation and the logic behind this research project. You mentioned that the act of labeling students as international can have, and I'm citing you now, real emotional consequences for students. Could you please give us a couple of examples of how this may happen?
Sure. And really, my interest in this topic came about because I was teaching in a pathway college, which is, for listeners who may not be aware, there are colleges which are often run by private corporations. I worked for one run by Kaplan International. Also, Study Group is a very big one, Navitas. And these colleges basically train students and try to raise their academic level up to a level where they can meet the admissions criteria for more selective universities. I worked there during the period where the immigration restrictions were being increasingly tightened, so between 2010 and 2012. Students were coming to me and getting really upset about things like having to go and do police registration, challenging why they were being asked to have to reveal their biometric data in order to gain legal entry into the UK. And some of them were saying to me that actually the act of being labelled by the state for immigration purposes as an international student made it very difficult for them to integrate with British students, which for many of them was their real goal. And things that are as simple as, you know, often international students will get their own induction or welcome week events. And this is meant to be very productive. It's supposed to be a sort of an introduction to British academic culture. But what it also does is segregates international students. And that can be quite upsetting for students who identify primarily as student rather than as international. So the act of labelling international students creates this difference. It establishes a binary distinction of you are international or you are not. And what that fails to do is to recognise all the many ways in which people can have international experiences, have international backgrounds, but not necessarily be labelled as international due to either their visa or their fee status, which, by the way, are not always exactly the same thing. And so I think what your question is kind of hinting at is, aren't we setting up a distinction if we talk about pedagogy specifically for international students? And that's a real challenge that we have taken on with this work, because there is an ethical sense in which I think we need to challenge our pedagogical structures if we want our higher education sector to be truly internationalized, not just recruit international students and international staff and international PhD students, but also to create and embed a global curriculum and a pedagogy which is equally accessible to home and international students alike. My concern, and this is where I think much of the literature hasn't been, to my mind, sufficiently critical, is that we haven't had, as a sector, a comprehensive reflection on decolonize the curriculum movement, on how exclusive our curricula and our pedagogies are, who gets marginalised and who gets left out. And so that's our motivation for looking at pedagogies, we say, for and with international students. That's not to say that you would have a specific different way of teaching, especially for international students. It's to say, has the presence of international students in our classrooms genuinely changed the way we teach in the way in which it has been framed in policy discourse?
Thank you very much, Sylvie. So what are the anticipated benefits of this project and how you're planning to disseminate your research results?
So I think what we're hoping for is to, what we are trying to do is to get case studies of different teaching methods and to disseminate them. So what we're trying to do is to identify good practice. We're not trying to catch anyone out or find problems. We're trying to say, here are some people who are doing amazing work. Let's promote this and help it to transfer across disciplines, across institutions, because it's very hard in such a resource-stretched environment, especially now, to find the time to continuously develop one's pedagogy. So what we're hoping to do is to establish a really quick and easy to use repository where you can say, hey, I want to think about assessment. I've got lots of international students. What are some ideas? And you can just pop assessment into the search tool on our website and find a range of different approaches that people have used.
Thank you, Sylvie. In your second project, you look at the process of enacting internalization on a university level. Could you please explain what problems do you see with how internalization is currently conceptualized or enacted in the higher institutions within the UK?
So we're in the earlier stages of this project, so I can't really talk about the findings yet, but I can talk about the framings of the project. So what we're trying to do in this project is to look at the institutional policies on internationalization. So how is internationalization represented in institutional policy documents, and how do people in various leadership capacities or no leadership capacity at all, just in classrooms, how do staff enact these concepts of internationalization? What's the relationship between what they do in the classroom or what they do in leadership meetings? What is said in those meetings between, and what's the relationship between those sayings or actions and the documents? And hopefully to make a connection then between the way that universities actually practice internationalization and the broader national policy context. So in terms of problems, I think it's a little bit too early to say. What we were expecting to find from my previous work on the policy narrative is that there would be several key rationales for recruitment, which I've already alluded to earlier, which basically fall into the economic, educational, cultural categories. I think when it comes to universities, we can also predict that there's going to be a strong emphasis on the internationalization of research and impact. So how international engagement as a result of internationalized research can help to promote the university. We sort of predict that there's going to be a bit of a gap between the narratives in the institutional policy documents, which are often these very glossy, shiny brochures, very beautifully produced. We would suspect often with the help of an outsourced marketing or consultancy, and the actual practices or concepts from staff. And that's what we're interested in exploring, is there a gap? Is there continuity? And what are the links and connections? Because I think in many large institutions, there can be a disconnect between what's in the documents, what's coming out of the senior management level, and what's happening on the ground.
I understand that your project is still developing, but in your project proposal, you argue that internalization performs diverse normative functions. I want to ask you, what are those functions and what are dominant forces behind them?
So when we're talking about the normative functions of internationalization, what we're thinking about is how the notion of international as representing high quality and high status influences how institutions and individuals engage. So we can tie in the notion of capitals here. And a very simple example is to look at the REF, the Research Evaluation Framework language around what constitutes excellent or four-star research. So four-star research is described as world-leading. And as you go down the stars, you see that one star is described as having a local impact. So those give you a clear indication that international and global is perceived to be of higher intrinsic quality than local or regional. So there's a status associated with international research. Similarly, there's a status associated with being able to recruit international students. So having an internationalized classroom is seen as being a marker of quality. What that establishes is a norm for the sector, that every institution should be international in its research orientation, that it should be international in its recruitment of students, and that those should be embedded into the functions of the university. Now, I don't say those to challenge those functions. I would describe myself as an internationalist, you know, in my orientation of values. But what it does mean is, and this is what we're trying to highlight when we talk about the normative function, is it constrains the options for institutions and for individuals who, so for example, if you want to pursue a research career and you want to be rated highly on the REF, you have to be thinking about the internationalness of your research. You know, how can you maintain international networks? How can you establish international collaborations? What projects can you do that have international relevance? Which means that if what you really want to do is to have local social relevance, you're going to struggle to climb up those research rankings.
Thank you very much, Sylvie. My last question will be about Brexit. So Brexit is around the corner. We cannot avoid it. And I wanted to ask your opinion. What do you think are emerging tensions and contradictions in the higher education sector as a result of Brexit?
I think we're going to experience lots of challenges. I think other people have spoken about this very, very articulately. I think that the challenges for the UK are going to be really long term in terms of international students and in terms of maintaining the UK's reputation and status for higher education, because we've benefited hugely from European mobility on a staff and a student level, from engagement in European research networks. And also from the more leisure associated background. It sounds trivial, but it's not trivial that our students who come here to study, for example, from China, want to be able to travel in Europe and want to be able to do so fairly easily. It hasn't been easy already with the Schengen visa arrangements. That's been an additional challenge that students hadn't anticipated, and many are quite disappointed that it's actually not straightforward for them. As travel becomes more difficult, that may reduce the more social, almost tourist aspects of a UK education. But for me, I think the real concern is economic and political. So I've written about the soft power dimensions of UK higher education. And currently, the UK policy positions higher education as being a soft power asset. So it's seen as something that enhances the UK's influence overseas. I think that we should be concerned in the other direction, that as the UK's influence within Europe and beyond declines, we may start to maintain our attractiveness as a higher education sector. So one of the reasons, I think it's actually the other way around. I think part of the reason that students come is because we are seen as an important economic nation, as a nation that has current political relevance, although we trade a lot on our history in the marketing and promotion of UK higher education. So my concern is that as the UK's power and influence declines, as it is going to do dramatically, as our economy suffers, we're going to become a less attractive destination. And it's going to be very difficult to counteract that because it's not within the control of the higher education sector. I think we discount a lot of these associative elements of what makes the UK an attractive place for international students and for international research. Things like it was widely advertised, I think, must have been last year before the coronavirus, that a seminar at the London School of Economics that was supposed to be hosting many African scholars, their visas were refused. And so it ended up being basically an event where British and American scholars discussed African issues. That's the kind of thing that seriously impacts our potential to engage in the kind of global research which is promoted as normative by the very same government. It's easy to assume that because we have such an established sector, we can easily overcome that. But it's now been, as I mentioned, the visa restrictions that were introduced in 2010. It's now been 10 years since those were introduced. Yes, the post-study work visa has come back in. But we've had 10 years of an essentially very hostile, a government that's very hostile to immigration. And that creates a reputational toll, I think, in the long term, that we've become seen gradually as less welcoming, less intercultural, much more parochial. And if our economic status declines seriously, it simply won't be fun to stay here for the short term and to study here.
Thanks for your opinion, Sylvie. It was nice talking to you, and I'm looking forward to learn more about your project in the future. So hopefully I will see you here at the Educational Researcher talking about findings of your current research project.
Oh, it would be my pleasure.
Thank you. It was Sylvie Lohmer and the Higher Education Researcher. Have a good day.